I'm Montse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, fight to the end. China increases retaliatory tariffs on the United States in response to President Trump. We're at the White House. Growing prices. We take a look at the potential impact of the latest tariffs on farmers in the United States. Tragedy and devastation. Officials scramble to identify survivors as the number of casualties climbs to more than 100 following a roof collapse at a Dominican Republic nightclub. And the sound of success. A Catholic cathedral receives one of the final pieces of its reconstruction. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight. In a stunning move that no one saw coming, President Donald Trump pauses tariffs on most nations for 90 days, but raises taxes on Chinese imports. That all happened this afternoon, sending markets soaring, including the Dow, which finished back above 40,000, up nearly 3,000 points. We have team coverage of the latest tariff developments with Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales and White House correspondent Owen Jensen covering all of the angles. We begin at the White House with correspondent Owen Jensen. Owen, it's a busy day for the Trump administration.
Yeah, it sure is, Monsi. You're absolutely right. Just after 1 o'clock this afternoon, in fact, 1:18 p.m. to be precise, President Trump posted on Truth Social his latest tariff move, which invigorated the markets and altered the tariff battlefield.
President Donald Trump posting on social media, based on the lack of respect that China has shown to the world's markets, I am hereby raising the tariff charged to China by the United States of America to 125%, effective immediately.
China wants to make a deal. They just don't know how quite to go about it.
But also adding, I have authorized a 90-day pause and a substantially lowered reciprocal tariff during this period of 10%. Also effective immediately.
I did a 90-day pause for the people that didn't retaliate because I told them if you retaliate, we're going to double it.
That pause applying to more than 75 countries. Outside the West Wing, the press secretary and secretary of the Treasury addressed reporters.
Do not retaliate and you will be rewarded. So every country in the world who wants to come and negotiate, we are willing to hear you. We're going to go down to a 10% baseline tariff for them.
Apparently not wanting to make a deal, China announcing it would raise tariffs on American goods to 84%.
The tariff on China will now go up to 125% because China imprudently decided to retaliate against the United States. And as I said at the podium yesterday, when you punch at the United States of America, President Trump is going to punch back harder.
And the European Union approving retaliatory tariffs on $23 billion in goods in response to Trump's 25% tariffs on imported steel and aluminum. Canada, meanwhile, lamenting the trade war.
The relationship between Canada and the U.S. will never be the same. The trust was affected by what happened. This trade war was launched out of nowhere against your best ally, friend, and neighbor.
And Michigan's auto industry, reliant on trade with Canada and Mexico, the governor of that state saying today in a speech in Washington before Trump's midday surprise announcement that she understands the motivation behind the president's tariffs.
So while I share the president's goal of bringing good-paying middle-class manufacturing jobs back, it's got to be done right.
And on the South Lawn of the White House today, President Trump called President Xi a proud man. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thanks so much, Owen. Now, despite the 90-day pause, President Trump's escalating tariffs on trading partners has not only rattled U.S. and international markets, it's also set off alarm bells in Congress. In response, a group of senators introduced bipartisan legislation to rein in presidential power on tariffs. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales continues our team coverage with the latest.
Well, good evening, Monsi. Yes, the new legislation to rein in President Trump's power on tariffs was introduced by Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell and Republican Senator Chuck Grassley. It would require the president to notify Congress of impeding tariffs within 48 hours. and Congress would have to approve the action within 60 days of notification. It's unlikely it'll ever pass both the House and the Senate, and the president has already said that he does plan to veto it if it comes to his desk. But Republicans welcome the 90-day pause and say that it is a win for President Trump.
I like what President Trump did. Pause it. Give the country a chance to come in and negotiate with him and his team. But keep hammering China. Keep going up on them.
We've got 195 countries in the world. Fully half of them immediately approached the administration and said, we're willing to lower our trade barriers that we've had for years and years and years if you will not do this. And some of them are willing to lower to zero.
Senator Kennedy adds, this is the Trump effect. Meanwhile, Democrats continue to lash out, saying Americans are paying the price.
The nation is in tariff chaos. No one really knows what's going on, especially the president. These tariffs are self-inflicted catastrophe on the United States.
Overwhelming majority of American people oppose tariffs. There are ways to try to make competition more fair, but let's not do it by increasing prices on Americans. And their estimates are it's going to be about $3,800 per family in terms of increased costs.
Republicans fired back, saying the president should be given time for this to play out.
The president ran on this. There wasn't a campaign event where he didn't talk about the importance of getting other countries to treat us more fairly. I think he deserves the opportunity to see what kind of deals he can get from some of our trading partners.
Senator Thune hopes the 90-day pause and the new higher tariff levied against China will encourage its leaders to start trade talks with the U.S.
I think there's a lot of rhetoric right now, but I'm hoping that in the end that the Chinese, like a lot of other countries, will come to the table. There is clearly, in my view, room for negotiation.
Senator Kennedy adds China is trying to save face, but he's confident that they will blink first. He also adds that they sell to us about 5 times more than we sell to them. And in Senator Kennedy's own words, he's confident President Xi is already making reservations at Washington, D.C.'s Marriott to negotiate a trade deal. Monsi?
Well, Eric, switching gears, you're also following the latest on the budget resolution negotiations to fund the government for 2026. A blueprint passed the Senate last week. Mm-hmm. What's the latest in the House?
Well, sources are telling me that House Republican leadership plans to bring the joint House-Senate budget resolution, that's the blueprint, to the floor tonight. However, more than a dozen House Republicans were opposed to the resolution, even after having a closed-door meeting with President Trump just days ago. Now, last night, the president sent a strong message to those Republicans on the fence.
It's so important that we pass the big, beautiful bill. Got to get there. Close your eyes and get there. It's a phenomenal bill. Stop grandstanding. Just stop grandstanding.
House Speaker Mike Johnson says that he's confident the tide will turn and the vote is expected later tonight. I'll be following that and have more for you tomorrow.
We'll look forward to that. Thank you so much, Eric. Well, the blanket 84% Chinese tariffs will be devastating for U.S. farmers who are major exporters to China. According to the U.S.-China Business Council, agriculture and livestock exports to China support more U.S. jobs than any other sector by a wide margin. In 2022, those exports supported an estimated 213,000 jobs. In 2023, oilseeds and grains, crops such as soybeans, wheat, and corn remained the largest export to China. And if history is our guide, the outlook may be bleak. The USDA estimates farmers lost $27 billion in exports during the 2018-2019 trade war with China. Joining us now to discuss the tariffs' effects on farmers is James Ennis, Executive Director of Catholic Rural Life. James, it's good to see you. I know your organization seeks to help Catholic life thrive in agricultural communities. When looking at the tariffs between China and the U.S., how do you see this affecting farmers directly?
Well, farmers are dependent on sales of their products, and over 20% of their farm income come from international markets. So tariffs can have a big impact. Farming is already a low-margin business, so any changes in revenue can have a significant impact on their profitability for that year. So a lot of farmers are concerned and wondering what the impact's going to be.
Well, the American Soybean Association sounded the alarm, saying that tariffs on China could result in billions lost annually for this industry. On top of the tariffs, farmers are also suffering from the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, dismantling USAID. In 2020, the U.S. government purchased roughly $2.1 billion in food aid from farmers. Do you see the Trump administration providing another bailout like it did in 2018, and would that be enough?
Well, I know, you know, farmers are still waiting to hear, see the impact of DOGE on some of these USDA programs and within the USAID. But I think that the government, it will support farmers and any kind of major deficits that I see coming down the pike. I think the government will support our farming community, because our farmers are providing food, not only for our community, not only for the United States, but for the world. And I see a lot of farmers voted for this administration and put their trust in this new administration to do what was good and right. And so I think the new administration will take care of farmers down the road.
And just for our viewers that may not be familiar, what role does your organization play in helping these communities infuse the Catholic faith in everything that they do?
Well, we work with pastoral leadership and with lay men and women across the country in rural to strengthen their faith in their Catholic faith, and that impacts their rural communities. So we work with parishes, bishops, and dioceses across the country to strengthen their Catholic faith, and that impacts their influence in their communities and their parishes.
Well, we'll certainly be praying for the effects of these tariffs. Thank you so much, James.
Thanks for having me.
We still have a lot more to come on EWTN News Nightly, including an agonizing wait in the Dominican Republic. Families stand by for news about their loved ones following a deadly roof collapse. We speak with the country's Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs about the situation and what the government's doing. And doctors are calling it a miracle. A woman gives birth using a donated womb. But should people be celebrating? We speak to a Catholic bioethicist. The number of casualties has risen following the deadly roof collapse at a nightclub in the Dominican Republic. Officials are scrambling to identify victims of the tragedy as dozens wait to find out the fate of their loved ones. Additionally, hundreds are injured after the roof collapsed early Tuesday at the Jet Set Club in Santo Domingo. The Archbishop of the Diocese of Santo Domingo weighed in and offered prayers for the victims and their families.
The Catholic Church prays for this situation, and we join in solidarity all those who are affected. We promise our prayers for those who have died. And we want to also join in the great collaboration of so many brothers and sisters who are coming together to help.
Joining us now is Jatzel Roman, Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs for the Dominican Republic. Jatzel, thank you for joining us. First off, families are grieving. They're waiting for their loved ones to be identified. Can you describe the scene for us?
Well, just to get you acquainted with what's happening, Jet Set Nightclub is one of the most traditional in Santo Domingo with over 50 years of history. And Mondays, Dancing Mondays, Lunes Bailables, was one of its biggest traditions. So you had birthday parties there, you had company get-togethers there, you had people of all classes, you had some of the most important businessmen, some of the legislative leaders in the country, and humble people there joining hand-to-hand on Monday when this happened at around midnight. Sadly, at the moment that we're speaking, there have been over 130 casualties. Out of those, 91 bodies have been identified by family members. There's been around 160 people who have been hurt. This is the deadliest tragedy that has happened in the country, not related to nature and hurricanes. And such, it's one of the most deadly tragedies in the world relating to this type of get-togethers. And so among those who have sadly, tragically passed away, we had one of the presidents of one of the leading financial institutions in the country, the son of the former president of the Senate. We have our beloved merengue singer, Ruby Perez, who was just 10 days ago part of a tribute at our esteemed Soberano awards that celebrate music and so on. This was supposed to be a celebration of life, a celebration of the Caribbean tropical atmosphere that is in our area. So we are all grieving. At the moment that we're speaking, there are still over 30 bodies that have not been identified, sadly.
It's devastating, and our hearts are with all of you and with everyone in the Dominican Republic. Tell us, how is the government then responding to this disaster, and is there international help pouring in?
Yes, we have had very esteemed help from, for instance, the island of Puerto Rico, Governor Jennifer González Colón sent the fireman department to help with the recoveries. We had help from the American Embassy, we had help from Israel, and so on. Also private sector help, for instance, Barrick Gold Mining Corporation, with experiencing disastrous situations, have helped so much. We had so much solidarity from our Spanish-speaking neighbors, but also other countries, and so on. Sadly, most of what's been found has not been the happy situation. We've had people die much more than we've found them alive, but it should be over by today. We could do a more profound assessment of what led to this situation, which, as I mentioned, that you've seen it from so many artists from many parts of the world. We've had Alejandro Sanz from Spain, we've had Don Omar from Puerto Rico, we've had Marc Anthony there and so on present themselves. So this was a very popular place, a very happy place, which sadly will now forever be linked to sorrow. And this right before Palm Sunday begins, Semana Santa, which is so esteemed in our community, of course, in all of the Catholic community, but this was supposed to be right before the celebration of Jesus Christ.
Well, we know that he is with you and with every single member of that community, and we pray for restoration for those families. Jatzel, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Doctors in the UK are hailing what they say is a miracle, a baby girl who was born to a mother using IVF and a donated womb. The baby's mother was born without a functioning uterus. She received her sister's womb in 2023. And recently, she and her husband revealed the birth of their first daughter. The couple are in their late 30s and say they have hoped to have a second child. The Catholic Church strongly opposes IVF and largely opposes methods like womb donation, amid concerns of human dignity and the possible misuse of the technology. For more, we turn to Dr. Joseph Meany, past president and senior fellow of the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Dr. Meany, it's great to have you back with us. Reports in the United Kingdom are hailing this birth from a donated womb as a miracle. What are the ethical questions surrounding this? How should we think about this as Catholics?
Yeah, so organ transplantation requires a number of things to be ethical. And one is that the procedure is, you know, proportionate in terms of the risks and the benefits. And the womb transplants actually are quite dangerous. So that's the first thing against them. But the other problem, and I would say the major ethical problem with uterine transplantation, is that they are forced to use IVF to achieve pregnancy. So they're not able to achieve a natural pregnancy. They actually have to produce embryos in a lab in order to achieve these pregnancies.
Now, when we think about these innovations in science, immediately my mind goes to the use of these transplants for transgender surgeries. Is that something that you have in mind that you're worried about as well?
So that hasn't been done yet, but there are people discussing it, right? The idea of doing, you know, sex change operations that would involve transplanting a uterus into a man, it's at the theoretical stage, but I think there are some people who would like to do that, which would, of course, be tremendously unethical as well.
And as we mentioned, this is the first known birth of a baby using a donated womb in the United Kingdom. What comes next? And is this something that will be widely practiced in other parts of the world?
So since 2014, there have been 100 cases of children who have been born through transplanted wombs. Started in Europe, actually, in Sweden. But now the United States has several. I mean, we've had dozens in the U.S. in different parts of the country. So this is definitely picking up speed. And it's being done more in different parts of the world.
And might we see an uptick with the Trump administration pushing IVF?
It could be, yeah, because, I mean, this is something that is kind of part of that whole IVF industry is, you know, not only using surrogate women, but also using surrogate wombs in the sense of do these organ transplants. So that, I think, is part of the agenda out there in terms of treating infertility in ways that are highly unethical.
Now, switching gears slightly to a different story, recently there was a partial victory in court for a pro-life pregnancy center in Illinois. Tell us a little bit about NIFLA versus Tretto and why you think it's good news or bad news.
Yeah, so it is definitely mixed news. I mean, so the pro-life pregnancy centers and doctors are not going to be required to talk about the benefits of abortion, which the law had said that they would force pro-life pregnancy centers to tell the women who came to them about the benefits of abortion. So that clearly was just terrible and was struck down as unconstitutional. But there was also a provision that if they would not provide abortions, they would have to refer for abortion. And that the judge, district court judge, ruled was constitutional. And so that's going to be appealed to the Seventh Circuit Court. But of course, that is terrible. From an ethical perspective, you cannot refer a person for a completely unethical procedure. It's formal cooperation with evil. The church says you can never do that. And so they're basically forcing, you know, people to violate their consciences to physicians in particular to refer patients on to someone that they know will provide an abortion. That can never be done.
Well, it's something that we know the Supreme Court has looked at before, so we'll be looking out for that appeal. Thank you so much, Dr. Meany.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, dollars and incense. The Vatican's financial watchdog releases its annual report, and there's a little good news to share. Plus, the Holy See is set to have a presence at an event nicknamed the Art Olympics. Welcome back. A new study says that among members of Gen Z in the United Kingdom, Catholics now outnumber Anglicans by 2-1. According to a report from the Bible Society, among 18 to 24-year-old churchgoers in the UK, 20% identify as Anglican, 41% as Catholic, and 18% as Pentecostal. The group also found that 18 to 24-year-olds are the second most likely group in the UK to attend church at 16%, saying they are monthly churchgoers, compared with 19% of those over age 65. King Charles and Queen Consort Camilla celebrated their 20th wedding anniversary today by meeting the Holy Father. The couple is in Italy on a four-day visit. Today, they met privately with Pope Francis at Casa Santa Marta, where the Holy Father is recovering following his weeks-long stay in the hospital. The Holy Father expressed his best wishes to the couple. They, in turn, wished him a speedy recovery. The Vatican's financial authority says that in 2024, there was a significant drop in suspicious activity reports. In its annual report published today, the Holy See's financial watchdog says last year there were 79 suspicious activity reports. That's down from 123 in 2023, marking a drop of 36%. The group says the decrease represents a sharper focus on the selection process and not a lack of reporting such incidents. It also says there has been a spike in preventative measures that protect the Holy See. The Venice Biennale is considered one of Europe's largest celebrations of art. In fact, it is named the Art Olympics. Since its inception in 1895, this legendary international festival has been a stage for cutting-edge exhibitions. Benedikt Sjödergren brings us more about one of the events focused on architecture.
The Vatican will once again make its mark at the Venice Biennale of Architecture. Held every 2 years, the prestigious international exhibition explores innovative designs that may combat universal issues affecting the world. Hundreds of participants, including architects, engineers, scientists, and artists, will present their works across Venice, and among them, representatives from the Vatican. In a press conference with journalists, the Holy See revealed their exhibition and what it represents.
L'architettura ha un rapporto molto antico con la fede.
Architecture has a very ancient relationship with faith, and it is one of the artistic forms that has accompanied Christianity, we can say, from the very beginning, both for liturgical needs and to concretize the communal existence of the believers. The Church needs this craftsmanship, so faith and its celebration and community life can be shaped into one.
Si plasmano in una cosa sola.
This year's Biennale, which is scheduled from May 10th to November 23rd in Venice, is titled Intelligence, Natural, Artificial, Collective. Its aim is to explore how different forms of intelligence, natural, artificial, and collective, can address climate change and propose architectural solutions to contemporary societal, humanistic, and technological issues.
Noi abbiamo puntato tutte le nostre forze.
We have focused all our efforts on human intelligence, but not in individual terms, because each of us has our individual intelligence. Instead, we focus on those intelligences, that necessary and extraordinary form of intelligence, which we activate in encounters, in collectivity, in community life, because we are a community, and we see, we believe, that the community is truly the protagonist of a story.
Veramente protagonista di una storia.
For their exhibition, the Holy See has invited different architects, such as Tatiana Bilbao Estudio from Mexico and MAIO Architects from Spain. The name of their pavilion is Opera Aperta, Open Work. Unlike the other exhibitions, the Holy See will host theirs in the unused church of Santa Maria Auxiliatrice. They want the venue to reflect on openness and invite dialogue between architecture, culture, and spirituality in a place of contemplation.
So this building, El Complejo de Santa María Auxiliatrice, used to be a hospital for the pilgrims. Now it's underutilized. So the Vatican really wanted to understand how to put again in place this building as a place of serving the community. So the first thing that is needed in this building to be reused is the reparation of its walls and its elements. So that is what we're doing in this Biennale.
In Rome, Benedictia Degrian, EWTN, News Nightly.
Finally tonight, a Catholic cathedral in Prague receives one of its final pieces. St. Vitus Cathedral now has a new organ. The instrument is more than 42 feet high, weighing more than 13 tons, and comprised of more than 5,000 wooden and tin pipes. The cathedral is the largest temple in Prague and is the burial place of several patron saints as well as archbishops. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.